The Radio Today programme with Broadcast Bionics, working with the world's leading broadcasters and equipment suppliers to transform industry standard technologies and workflows.
Thank you for joining us for the July edition of the Radio Today Roundtable. I'm Trevor Dan. Let's see who is virtually around our table, starting with Mike.
Hi, it's Mike, Michael Hill. I run Radio Player, which is the broadcaster-backed radio platform now in 12 countries around the world. Started about 9 years ago in the UK as a collaboration between the BBC and commercial radio. Now very heavily focused on the future of radio in car dashboards.
Hello, I'm Jimmy Buckland. I look after strategy for Wireless, News UK's radio and audio division. And I also look after Wireless Studios, which is the in-house podcast production unit spanning both our radio and news publisher brands. I've also been lucky enough to be part of a very exciting project in the last few months to launch Times Radio.
I'm Fee Glover and I present the listening project for BBC Radio 4, fortunately with Jane Garvey, the little minx, for BBC Sounds. And a returning series on the World Service called My Perfect Country.
Well, it's a huge thrill to have you all with us. We will, of course, talk about Times Radio. Sadly, we'll have to talk about some cutbacks as well, and we'll have some recommendations from all our panellists for things that will improve what's going into your ears. But I did just want to start. We're recording this the day of the announcement that the government is finally putting some investment into the arts, and it's talked particularly about music venues and theatres. There's nothing especially for radio, but I assume as an industry we welcome this. Let me start with you, Fee. You must know people as I do who have really suffered during this pandemic. Do you think this is broadly good news?
I think it's got to be broadly good news. I think it sounds like a big amount of money, doesn't it? But actually, if you spread that across arts with a capital A, I think already people are worrying about whether it's going to go far enough. And do you know what? The most important thing that I've heard from so many people is just the passion that they have all had to continue with what they're doing and to find some small way. I think most of the people I know who are freelance are very accepting, you know, of their place in the world and the fact that, you know, they may not be seen as very high priority, but the passion with which they want to be able to resume, you know, not just earning a living, but doing what they do, you know, is hugely, I think, underestimated. And it's a voice that hasn't really been heard. And you understand why. You know, most people don't have an awful lot of sympathy for what they might see as the entertainment sector. You know, it's the add-on extra in such a world of crisis. But it's just hugely important for as much to come back as is humanly possible. You know, none of us wants to imagine a post-coronavirus world where the entertainment industry has died. We just don't want that to happen. You know, it may seem like a peripheral thing at the moment, but it's not actually. It's really integral.
Jimmy, I'm guessing that you, because you're working at the coalface of commercial radio, have come across the fact, as we've talked about on this programme before, advertising revenue is down. And so some of these cuts, not just in radio, but everywhere in the arts and live music, are just inevitable, aren't they?
Well, I don't think every organisation will inevitably have to make significant cuts. And certainly at our organisation, at News UK, whilst there is a programme of work looking at how we transform ourselves and how we take account of what we've learnt from this pandemic, we're focused, I think, here very much still on investing in the areas that are going to drive our future digital growth. And certainly within wireless, I think we've been able to retain a focus on investing. What I would say, though, is I've joined a number of discussions with government ministers and civil servants at DCMS over recent months, as have others in the commercial radio industry. And it's very clear that there are a number of sectors who have been coming to Treasury and saying, can we have some support? And in many cases, the message that's come back is saying the Treasury wants to provide support on a sort of pan-industry basis. And what's quite interesting is to see here a sector which actually has been able to show that it's in such need and actually probably will not reopen as quickly as most of the sectors, you know, and therefore is receiving this sector-specific package. It's certainly the case, Trevor, that radio has not had a sector-specific package. There isn't a specific programme of advertising spent by the government on radio.
Would you call for that? Would you support the kind of initiative that happened within the live music sector where letters were written saying, you know, for God's sake, send us some money now?
Well, I mean, the interesting thing with our sector is we are open for business. And we all know that commercial radio and radio advertising can be a very powerful tool for stimulating economic growth. And there is a direct correlation that's been shown in many excellent radio center studies between spending on radio advertising and sales performance. So there is an interesting question as to whether there are government measures that could be targeted at accelerating advertising spend to in turn provide some rocket fuel to the wider economy.
Mike Hill, you probably listen to more radio stations than any of us. What's happening at the moment? What's the trend in terms of the kind of radio that is being made? Obviously, we'll talk about Times Radio in a minute, but just do you have any general thoughts about what's coming out of people's smart speakers and car dashboards and everything else?
Yeah, obviously, we're in a privileged position in that we can see across the radio industry through our apps and players who's listening to what. We're always very careful with that information. We know that it's very sensitive data, but we can talk about general trends. You know, in between February and March, for example, listeners reach to radio jumped by 50%. You know, and that's an incredible, we've never seen anything like that before. We've seen the occasional spike after big news events, for example, but it was across the board. And I dug into the figures and I thought, well, what's driving that? And it's a combination of speech stations, people trying to stay in touch, and music stations that help people manage their moods, for want of a better term. You know, we were all very, I don't know if you can remember, but we were all very anxious. We were all very alone in our houses thinking what's going to happen. And I think people were using music and radio to manage their moods and to stay in touch. So yeah, 50% reach jump.
Just to be clear, to help Stuart, who's almost certainly writing this news article right now, is that just through radio player figures?
Yes, so that's all we can see, obviously, is through our players and our apps. It's a good sample. It's a big sample. There's millions of people who've downloaded our apps over the years, so it's a very robust sample. And I would stand by that probably being the same for example, smart speaker use, in-home listening generally. Of course, in-car listening will have gone down very significantly in that time.
Significant news, though. Fee, I wanted to ask you about how listeners have reacted to you during the lockdown, particularly through, fortunately, the pod that you do with Jane. It seems to me, as a listener to it, that it's all about wanting to be friends with these two people. And Mike was just saying that people want friendship at a time like lockdown, a time of stress and tension. Do you think, I don't want to underestimate this, but do you think actually you've got more friends now because people are really desperate to meet you?
Yes, is the honest answer. And I think Jane and I have been quite humbled, actually, by the amount of friendship that we have kind of generated around, fortunately, since lockdown started. And we were very aware right from the get-go in that first week that people just really wanted us to speak very honestly and very normally, kind of as their radio friends, about what we were feeling. So, you know, fortunately, has always been just a bit of a gander around both of our lives and our heads. And I think never more so, actually, than over the last 10 weeks, where we've been incredibly honest about how difficult we found everything and about how anxious we were at the beginning and how little we understood. And, you know, we both very much ditched any level of you know, slightly more kind of hierarchical broadcasting that we both do, you know, Jane more so than me on Woman's Hour because it's a live programme and she's covering all of those events. But the stuff that I do on the Listening Project as well, it has a different tone to it. And with Fortunately, we were absolutely the same as our listeners, I think. And what came back at us was just the most wonderful feeling of camaraderie and sharing it all together. And people have told us incredible stories about how hard they found it and funny stories about what they've been doing. And, you know, it's been a really joyful thing as well as a very cathartic thing to do and hopefully to listen to. And do you know what? I'm not at all surprised by that increase in radio listenership, because I think, you know, what we all know as radio professionals has really come to the fore, isn't it? That actually our job is quite simple. What we do is quite simple. And it is just being somebody's mate in the corner of the room or the car, you know, or your headphones. And, you know, never have people needed that and wanted it more. So it's lovely that we've all managed to do it, really, isn't it?
Talking of the different styles of podcasting and broadcasting, and we had Chris Mason on last month talking about this. Jane has said on this show as well that somehow Fortunately is more her than Woman's Hour, and that I think, you know, without putting words into her mouth, I think sometimes
God,
she
don't
finds
do that, Trevor. Yeah.
Okay. But you know what I'm saying? She does think that Woman's Hour is a bit of a constraint sometimes, and there's a sense of, well, read this. You know, this is Radio 4, for God's sake, woman. You've got to read a script. You can't just make it up. You obviously make programmes that are like that as well, where there is a script given to you. Do you think that Radio 4 and other stations are going to develop more of a sense of, no, we can't do that now. We've got to move on into a much more convivial and engaging style of presentation?
I think they'd be mad not to. I mean, if, you know, if what the huge increase in podcast listenership has shown is that that style of broadcasting is what people want, then I think it would be extremely odd to stay doing something that might make you sound a little bit dated and out of touch. I mean, the only caveat that I'd put into that is that if you're doing a news programme, I think it's always going to be important for the BBC to retain a certain tone, which is about impartiality, and it's about being authoritative, and, you know, you need to, I think, stay very much on point for that. But I think if you're trying to convey what people are thinking, feeling and want to talk about, then yes, you do have to have a different tone now. And why not? I mean, radio's always changed, hasn't it? I mean, if you listen to the stuff that went out in the 1960s, it would be unrecognisable to the way that Radio 4 speaks now.
This is a very good introduction fee to a whole new radio station, which is claiming to do some of those things. It's called Times Radio, and Jimmy Buckland works for the same company. Jimmy, I'm not expecting anything other than paeans of praise, but I guess genuinely there must be a feeling in the building that the launch went very well.
We're pleased with how the launch went, yes. We were very gratified to get some nice comments, both from listeners and also from people in the industry whose views we certainly respect and look to with some interest. But of course, we'll all know on this call, a radio station is something that is not created overnight. And I think with Times Radio, we know that it's very much a longer-term process of building a brand. That's something that we see happening over the next year and the coming years, and continuing to develop the sound and take on board feedback and to look at how we can market and promote the station to bring it to a wider audience as well. But yes, very pleased with the initial feedback.
We had David Hepworth from the Radio Times on this podcast last month, Jimmy, and he said, I just can't work out who it's for. So I wonder if you could help us with that. You know, when you sit around the strategy meetings that I'm sure you must attend, who is it aimed at? You know, it's clearly not just, oh, people who might, you know, abscond from Radio 4. Who do you have in mind as listeners?
Well, we were fortunate enough to be able to spend some time doing some quite in-depth research in coming up with the proposition for Times Radio. We did some original research, but we also drew quite heavily on some insight that the Times and the Times marketing team had developed around the audience for news in this country. And I think what was interesting was that they identified a cohort of people who are interested in news and current affairs, want to know what's going on in the world. Often are very time poor. That might be because of personal and family commitments. It might be because of professional commitments that obviously crowd into many of our daily lives. And of course, what audio does, what radio does, all of us on, you know, on this call and listening to this podcast will be well aware, is it fits around the daily habit very effectively. So for a news publisher like The Times, the opportunity after 235 years to gain a voice and move into audio was about reaching that cohort of people. It can be anyone across the UK who's interested in news and current affairs. But I think in terms of tonality and sound, we probably are focusing more on those under the age of 55, trying to bring some of what Feed described there around that human feel that a conversation, an intelligent, well-informed conversation can offer.
Mike, can I come to you? Has it attracted you? Have you moved away from any listening that might have been to 4 or 5 or Talk or LBC?
Actually, I've found my listening to be really disrupted since the pandemic. For a start, I used to have 2 long train journeys every day, and I used to sort of voraciously consume all sorts of audio on those journeys, and I don't have them anymore working from home. So I'm desperately trying to replace that listening time in my day. So actually, I found that what I listen to has been thrown up in the air rather a lot. I've also, frankly, had tough days managing my moods and trying to stay positive, as we all have, I'm sure. So I've tried to stop listening to so much news on those days. So probably listening to more music generally. I started listening to Times Radio, obviously, because it's a new radio station, but also because I knew that we'd be talking about it today. And I listened to it a lot over the last 3 or 4 days. And I've been really chuffed with it, actually. It's definitely on my presets now. I think it's really diverse, and I don't just mean sort of ethnically diverse, I mean topically diverse, really good gender balance as well. Sounds like a good age balance. I can't really tell, but it sounds like a relatively youthful lineup. I've really enjoyed the stuff. There's been stuff about theatre and cooking and archaeology and books. And I really love, Jimmy, the way that you're allowing the topics to run for longer. I think probably longer, it feels like, than any other speech station really lets things run, which I really love. Obviously, you haven't got ad breaks to contend with, and you haven't really got a sort of fixed, built schedule like Radio 4 has. But it feels really expansive and warm, and I've just been sticking with it. It's been great.
You're welcome to use that, Jimmy, in any advertising that you may require.
Clip that and put that in a promo, I think.
I think so. Fee Glover, I kind of imagined when I drew up a list of people I expected to be on Times Radio, you were one of them. So don't comment about that, but tell me what you've made of it as a listener.
I can comment about that if you want.
Go on.
Did you turn them down?
Go on. Did you?
I did have a chat with them. Lots of people had a chat with them. I think it is wonderful. Were you expecting me to say that? I think it's really good.
I'm delighted to hear you say that. So yeah. I like it too, but I'm too old for them, really. So it'd be embarrassing if I said I liked it.
Don't be ridiculous. So I think I would agree that letting things run a bit longer is really pleasurable, I think, especially at the moment, isn't it? You know, I think we're all very willing to embrace something that doesn't feel like it's hassling us. But also, I mean, obviously, you know, there are quite a few people on the station who previously have been on Radio 4 and 5 Live and lots of other stations that I have loved listening to. So nothing feels like it's a shock, which I also enjoy. I think Asma Mir is being brilliant at breakfast. She is brilliant. She's being particularly brilliant at being, you know, on it like a car bonnet. You know, she doesn't let Stig Abel get away with anything, and I'm really enjoying that already. And I thought, I listened to Mariella Frostrup the other afternoon, and she gave a guy who was defending the Chinese government's policy in Hong Kong such a fantastic going over in a very good, just a really brilliant radio way, where at one point she just said, look, I've only been able to ask you 2 questions. Stop giving me such long answers. And it was absolutely what you were thinking as the listener at home. So I think it's really good. I think it's really, really good. And I hope it continues to sail on at that speed, actually.
So 10 out of 10 for Times Radio. It's the July edition of the Radio Today Roundtable, and we'll have a small commercial message of the sort that you won't hear on Times Radio from, I think, Stu.
Thank you, Trevor. Yes, in these lockdown days we're living in, you might still be looking for a solution to get yourself on the air from home or to connect with guests for your radio show or your podcast. CleanFeed is one such solution, which is worth a try. There is a completely free version to get you started within minutes. And it's really good quality, just using a browser, no software to download or anything like that. You send a link, somebody at the other end clicks on it, and they connect with you in decent quality. It is really simple to use, as I said, and you can find out more about it at cleanfeed.net. That's cleanfeed.net. Trevor, back to you.
Fee Glover and Jimmy Buckland and Mike Hill are with me for the July roundtable. I'm Trevor Down. We've said some very positive things so far, but what do we make of the cuts at BBC Local Radio? I think perhaps three of us have had some experience of local radio. It always feels a shame and quite sad when you hear about the cutbacks, and then when you look at what David Lloyd likes to call their luxurious management structure, you do think, well, they kind of had it coming. Does anybody want to pick this one up? I'm going to go actually to you, Jimmy.
Well, I think the first thing to say is clearly this is not the death of local radio. I think what was striking for me in this story was perhaps an instance of a broadcaster doing its very best to try and manage the communications. And I think when there are so many parties involved, be it unions, be it management, different sites and so on, sometimes that's hard to do. So I think what does seem to have happened is that a lot of people have been unsettled by this announcement, which obviously is a shame for those involved. And, you know, we hope that they can get some answers and comfort and clarity as soon as possible, because I'm pretty sure that the BBC is not planning to move away from providing local radio. And I'm sure that we will continue to see a very strong commitment to the BBC from local radio in the future. The BBC does, after all, have a £477 million content budget allocated in the next year for radio content. So I think it's expecting to be able to find a significant portion of that for local radio. And one of the things that jumped out to me with wireless, you know, we were very sorry to see some very talented colleagues leave wireless when we sold some stations to Bauer last year. And it was interesting to see the BBC talking about, in some cases, wanting to do more. I think three towns that they picked out were towns that we know well from a local radio point of view, in Blackpool and Wolverhampton and Bradford. And it was interesting to see the BBC saying, actually, we might do more in those towns in the future.
I think this is good news for community stations, isn't it, Mike?
Yeah, I mean, redundancy, shrinkage, job cuts are never good news in the short term. It's always a massive shock for the individuals affected, and I've been there, I know what it's like. But it almost always comes good in the end. I think what's happened here is that BBC Local Radio, in changing its schedules to respond to the pandemic, realised that it could do things differently. And this pattern, we're seeing it repeated across several different sectors, actually. Car companies, we work with a lot of car companies, and they've received a massive shock during this crisis. Some of them are, frankly, still reeling from it, but the best of them are saying, OK, right, what are we going to do now then? And they're already re-strategizing and retooling and heading in different directions to what they thought they were heading in 6 months ago. And I think there's a bit of that here. And I welcome that. I think, you know, although it's awful for the individuals, it will probably result in a stronger BBC local radio structure in the long term.
Fee, what do you make of it?
Well, I suppose I just really want to emphasise that point about how bad it is for the individuals. I mean, my heart sinks a bit whenever I read about local radio being slashed, having started in local radio, and obviously the Listening Project is entirely powered by the most incredibly hardworking local radio producers. And I suppose what I think about these cuts in particular is just the way that it does seem to have gone for the people at the bottom of the tree. I mean, in BBC language, it's below SBJ, senior broadcast journalist, isn't it? Where I think they're hoping to make most of the redundancies. And those will be young people. You know, it's a highly competitive business. So if you've managed to get your foot in the door at BBC local radio station, then you're really good at your job already. And I think it's a terrible shame in a fast-paced, ever-changing industry, that it might be those people who the BBC loses. Because you know, the BBC just needs that young blood at the moment. You know, there is a youth quake going on, and so there should be. So my heart sinks about that. I mean, it's heartening, you know, to hear all of you. I mean, I don't want to call you long in the tooth, gentlemen, but all of you experienced and mature professionals seeing the positive in this, you know, and I take that from you. If you believe that, you know, this makes for stronger community stations, you know, and that BBC local radio will survive in the long run, then I'll take your expertise on that. But just as a worker bee, I just really feel for my colleagues. I think it's harsh. And also, they've done such a bloody good job. You know, they've had over 1 million calls and texts and emails to the Make a Difference campaign during lockdown. You know, they've undoubtedly really helped people and turned people's lives around and saved them from loneliness and put them in touch with food banks. You know, they've done a really, really good job. So if you're sitting on a, you know, local radio station at the moment, you know, wondering whether or not you're going to still have your job in 3 weeks' time and you're knackered and emotionally exhausted from all of that, I just really feel for them, really feel for them.
At the other end of the BBC tree, Tim Davey is to be the new Director General. This broke just after, I think hours after last month's roundtable, so we didn't have a chance to discuss it then. I think all of us know him because we've worked with him in one way or another. Tim Davey, a man who likes to run very long distances, and he's going to have to do quite a lot of running in this job, I guess. What do we think his appointment means for the future of the radio and indeed online audio at the BBC?
Well, I think he's absolutely not the continuity candidate. Although he's coming from inside, he's energetic, he's impatient, the clock's always ticking in his head. And in many ways, I suspect it's easier to be radical if you've sat in board meetings, frustrated by the bottlenecks from the inside of the organisation. You know where those bottlenecks are. He'll be hitting the ground running. You know, as you say, running is his thing. I remember he was the architect of Radio Player. It was his idea when he was director of radio at the BBC. And I remember standing in his office with a flip chart, and it felt like a very pressured situation. I was sort of designing the Radio Player model live in real time in his office, sketching on this flip chart. And it was like, no, no, no. And then eventually I drew something almost in desperation that might work as a kind of organisational structure and a technological structure as well. And he said, oh, I'm just off on 2 weeks holiday. If that still fits when I come back, let's do it. And that was the birth of Radio Player. And he's very impatient, very energetic, and I think he'll be a great thing.
He is also the man who wanted to kill Six Music, though.
Well, we all make mistakes.
Let's leave that one hanging. Jimmy Buckland, did you work with Tim on sort of radio festivals and things like that?
I haven't worked closely with Tim on a personal level, but certainly I've been involved in a number of projects that have his fingerprints on them, as it were, and Mike mentioned Radio Player there. I mean, I remember I was working at Radio Centre when he first took on the role at Director of Audio and Music. And I think one of the things that I recall from that period was that he embraced partnerships with the industry, or he certainly set as a mantra that he would seek to embrace partnerships with commercial radio. I suppose that would be my question. Here's a man who has huge commercial acumen, marketing experience, was a marketeer before joining the BBC. And wouldn't it be great if he applied that not just on behalf of the BBC, but on behalf of the broadcasting sector in this country more generally? And I think one area that's particularly interesting to think about in relation to that thought is the area of platforms and technology, because all of the broadcasting sector faces some external challenges and changes. A lot of that is to do with the influence of technology platforms over how broadcasting content is consumed. And it would be great, I think, if Tim and the BBC that he leads embraced a sort of real partnerships mindset in how we tackle questions around platforms and around access to British audio and radio content.
I would echo that, Jimmy. I think from our perspective, we're finding it very hard to get traction with the Amazons and the Googles of this world. Radio is no longer in charge of the distribution paths in those platforms. And I think we're going to have to get together as a sector and work out how to talk to people who are becoming incredibly influential in the consumption of our content.
I was just going to say that I think when he arrived as head of BBC Radio, there was a lot of chin scratching about what's this guy whose main claim to fame is painting a Concorde blue to launch some kind of brand of Pepsi. What the hell does he know about radio? But actually, when he'd not been there very long, people began to warm to him very much. You know, he wasn't a slash and burn kind of manager, was he? He was quite encouraging. Fee, did you ever have any personal dealings with Tim?
A couple of times. And do you know what? Isn't it funny? But I mean, only at the BBC could people scratch their chins in mild horror at the notion of someone who's hugely successful coming into their organisation and being able to understand us. I think he's really good news. I mean, I don't know him personally. He's never been directly in charge of any programmes that I've been making. But I think he's really good with talent. I've not heard anybody... Talent's a terrible word, isn't it? I've not heard any other presenters have a whinge and a moan in the same way that they might have done about other people right at the top of the tree. I think all of that experience in the outside world can only be a good thing for the BBC because, you know, what has been politely referred to as bottlenecks is also, I think, often
referred
to. Well,
we've all met one
in,
of them, haven't
yes,
we?
Yes, slightly. We know a bottleneck or two. But, you know, the frustration sometimes of not being able to get over that hurdle of the W1A-ness of the BBC, you know, kills creativity. That's what happens. You'll go, you know, you'll have a fantastic idea and it gets trapped in that bottleneck. And all we exist to do is to get ideas from our brains, you know, out into the audience. And I think he just really gets that. And, you know, the slight that he's always had, oh, he comes from marketing. Well, I mean, you know, the BBC needs some marketing. Yeah, that is a really good thing. That's a good stripe to have on your shoulder at the moment. So, you know, I don't want to sound too oleaginous about him, but I think it is a good appointment. I think it is. So, I hope he really does the business as well.
Let's all go and look up oleaginous while we listen to another advert.
The Radio Today programme with Broadcast Bionics, creators of the Bionic Studio. Listening, watching, reacting to and learning from every spoken word, caller, tweet and SMS to unmix, unlock and understand your content. The Bionic Studio transforms everything about radio except the way you make it.
Radio Today. Quite smooth and oily, apparently. We're on the July roundtable with Fee Glover, with Jimmy Buckland and with Mike Hill. This is the really exciting bit where we find out what they've been listening to and what they'd like to recommend for our listening pleasure. Let us start with Jimmy.
I'm going to start with a confession, which is I've been busy helping launch a radio station and immersed in some of our own output. And I'm afraid... cards on the table. I have two recommendations from our own fold, which I know is not really
it's allowed.
The thing. Well, you're very
you're
kind,
not the
Trevor.
Only person who's done this.
Well, I'll be brief so that we can have some other recommendations from elsewhere as well from Fee and Mike. So, two quick recommendations. Just firstly, today's episode of Stories of Our Times, which is our daily podcast that we launched earlier this year for the Times, is just fascinating. So today being Monday, but it'll obviously still be available across the week. And it's investigating the origins of the virus. And one of the exciting things is when we get access to exclusive journalism that the Times and the Sunday Times have worked on. And this podcast episode tells the story of yesterday's exclusive, which led the front page, investigating where the virus came from and could it have originated in a Chinese laboratory. So that's well worth a listen. And Manveen, as she always does a lovely job of telling that story.
A group of men were sent to work clearing out an abandoned mine, a copper mine. It was quite an incredible place, and it was teeming with bats, rats and shrews. In the time that it had been left abandoned, it had been completely colonised by bats. So the floor was covered with bat droppings and there was fungus and all sorts of things. It smelt absolutely revolting when you went into there. The men's task was to clear that out. After 2 weeks, some of the men became ill.
What was happening to them?
They came down with very COVID-19-like symptoms. So they had pneumonia, high fever, cough. 6 men in all contracted pneumonia. Some have to have been in the mine for only a matter of a few days. They were gradually admitted to the local hospital one by one because their pneumonia was so, so serious. The hospital was mystified. They didn't quite know what it was. They gave them a huge number of tests for all sorts of different exotic diseases. They didn't do the tests until after 2 had already died. In fact, 3 would die, sadly.
Wow, so this was quite a lethal coronavirus. It wasn't SARS, but something quite like it. And this is back in 2012.
Yes, so 8 years ago.
I think that's influenced in a very good and positive way by the great work of the New York Daily that comes out of the New York Times. Splendid stuff, stories of our times. Jimmy, your second choice?
We've all responded in different ways, haven't we, to the Black Lives Matter movement. And one of the interesting features of that movement is how it's impacted on all of us as broadcasters. And maybe it's just me, but I'm always fascinated in language and the role and impact that different words and language can have. And there's a really interesting discussion in TalkSport's Game Day podcast from last Thursday, which is trying to understand racial bias. And in that episode, you'll hear Sam Matterface, who's TalkSport's chief commentator, with Trevor Sinclair and Darren Lewis from The Mirror and Alex Crook, discussing the power that different language and terms can have in terms of conditioning a racially biased understanding of football and of footballers. So there's a really fascinating discussion about how certain language sort of stands as code for race and different racial characteristics. So just a really interesting discussion, and obviously for TalkSport and for any sports broadcaster, you know, a fascinating discussion and a prompt, I think, for all of us as to how the language we use can condition some prevailing, you know, racial stereotypes that perhaps we need to move away from.
When I talk about Jason, I talk about also the number of people who phoned into that radio show that night and bombarded my Twitter feed, some of whom were black. You know, some people don't know their history.
And listen, no one's picking on Jason here for a start.
At all, not for one second. You know, and you know, I know, again, I know Jason. I know what Jason's about. I know what he stands for. So what I'm saying is that it was a subject that we discussed that a lot of people were upset by, and they didn't understand what I was saying. And like I say, we have a generation of people who, you know, black and white in some cases, don't know their history. And so sometimes it's about alerting people to the background behind these words that are being used inadvertently to reinforce stereotypes that another generation is being lumbered with.
Trevor, language is really important, isn't it? And we have to be careful with it. We have to be thoughtful about the words we use for a variety of different reasons, and we don't always get it right.
I have to say, just listening to what Darren said there, I've been guilty of saying that before, in particular cases where, you know, you have got an athlete who's incredibly strong, and I have come out and said, what, you know, he's a monster or he's a beast, or, you know, and subconsciously, when you look back, that's the wrong kind of language to use.
That's the Game Day podcast from TalkSport. Thank you, Jimmy Buckland. Mike Hill, now, this is a piece of radio. Most people are choosing podcasts these days, but here's some good old radio, and very good.
Yeah, you know, I said earlier I've been managing my moods while working from home and going slightly crackers. Well, Craig Charles has been helping me with that. Craig Charles' Funk and Soul show on Six Music, of course, listened to via Radio Player. Where else? So if you just get your Radio Player app, tap in Craig Charles, you'll see all his programmes from Six Music. And he's been recently doing some look-backs at his Glastonbury DJ sets, and they are full of energy and positivity. They're fantastic. So if you're having a bad day, whack on Craig Charles' Funk and Soul show, particularly the ones where he's doing his Glastonbury DJ sets.
It's my Glastonbury trunk of funk. Tunes that I have dropped in the fields at Worthy Farm. From when I played the Pussy Parlour where we started out, to Cube Henge in the Dance Village. And then Shangri-La. The Hell Stage, now the Truth Stage. Friday afternoons, those epic sets. we care so much about and put so much attention in. And sometimes, even now, as a DJ, you're setting up the decks and you're staring at an empty field and you're thinking, I hope people come. And you always do. You've turned it into a feature of Glastonbury, really. And I will be forever grateful. And it will return. I'll be there. Hope you will be too. There's so many tunes that have come out this year that I'd already earmarked to take down to Glastonbury. The Harlem Gospel Travellers. I'm sure I would have given them a spin at Worthy Farm this weekend. Their track Fight On be coming up very shortly.
There's Craig, now. Funk and Soul on Six Music from Glastonbury. And now the Canyons of Your Mind, Mike.
Yes. So this is a podcast that I've discovered while judging the excellent British Podcast Awards, which are coming up on Saturday evening, of course. This one's called Mind Canyon, and it's nominated in those awards. It's a kind of improvised audio mind trip, and it's done by improvisation comedians. It's kind of a surreal accompaniment to what's becoming increasingly a surreal world, and I'm finding it a very good compliment to that.
You've got a lot of tattoos all over your face, I can see.
Sound tattoos.
Yes, yeah, absolutely.
Whispers they can, on the wind.
Yeah.
So, what do you want done on your arm? On your face?
I want a whisper.
You want a what?
A whisper.
You want me to tattoo a whisper chocolate bar?
No.
You want me to, the lyrics to Silent... What's the whisper song by Wham?
George Michael?
Oh, I forgot about that Wham song, George Michael. That was one of my favourite Wham songs.
Yeah, do you want to hear it?
Yeah.
George Michael.
Did you hear the buzz?
George Michael.
Andrew Ridgely.
Michael.
We need to find out who is behind this.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, we know who's behind one of them, but there's something... Here.
Sorry, did I miss that interview?
Well, thank you for that, Mike. I wonder if it'll win. Who knows? The Mind Canyon podcast. And good luck to everybody who's featuring in the British Podcast Awards on Saturday. We've got two left, both from Fee Glover. Fee, what are you going to choose first?
So I've got two very, very different podcasts. The first of them is Anthems, which is made by Broccoli Content, which I think is now funded by Sony, isn't it? Anyway, it is little, very short podcasts, always around a theme of first-person experience. So a different person will just pick something like shame or guilt or pain or pleasure and basically just do a 7 or 8 minute essay about what that means to them. And if that sounds a bit highfalutin, it just couldn't be further from that. They are absolutely beautiful. I listened to one by Hannah Walker Brown about faith and one by Scotty about shame. And they just take you into another person's head. They're never longer. I think the longest one on there, and there are about 30 or 40 to choose from, is 12 minutes. Most of them are 6 or 7 minutes. So they're just beautiful little things to listen to if you want to get out of your own head.
Hey, I'm Paula Akpan, and I'm a writer and journalist based in London. A lot of my work centres on exploring blackness, queerness, sexual and reproductive justice, and the histories combined within all of these. Right now I'm in my living room with my feet up on an ottoman, watching old episodes of Catfish because that's where I'm at right now. Your word of the day is unfurl. Black queer people, we're constantly in motion, in action, on the move. From on-the-ground organising and protests we've instigated, to contributions to critical and radical thought we've provided, to the ways we show up for one another again and again. But it's tiring work. It's tireless work. I watch my activist friends continually spurn yards and yards of creativity out of urgency. That urgency hinges on providing those coming after us with more than what we had. It's also out of pain. The pain of knowing that if they don't continue to build these spaces, if they don't advocate on behalf of our marginalised communities, stories will continue to be lost. Experiences will continue to be negated. Voices will continue to be drowned out.
Anthems from Broccoli. Broccoli, one of the chief people there now. Of course, your old friend Tony Phillips from Radio 4 Fee.
Yes, there is that connection. There is that connection, yeah.
So you might be working for them soon?
I don't think so. No. Okay. I'm very happy where I am, Trevor. Should I say that
fishing,
again?
Just fishing.
Very happy where I am.
Okay, what's your second choice?
So the second one just could not be more different. So this is Staying at Home with the Williamses, which is Robbie Williams doing a podcast with his wife, Ada Field Williams, in lockdown. And it's just hilarious. And I came across it by accident. And I was quite surprised, actually, that there hasn't been more noise about it, because it's just delightful. I mean, everybody loves Robbie. There's something wrong with you if you don't love Robbie, because he's so self-effacing, isn't he now? He's an inside-out person. So, of course, their podcast is just wonderfully indiscreet. The latest one, which is about Robbie trying to make an omelette, and that really is about as far as it gets. You know, Robbie's trying to make an omelette. It's just funny and it's just weird. And they're just amusing about their ridiculous LA lifestyle. She strikes me as being the kind of girl you would really want to have as your best friend. It's just wonderful. It's just LA bonkers. And again, takes your head to a completely different place, which all of the best podcasts do.
Today's episode is about food. Hey, Ada Field Williams.
Yeah. You can't actually ever decide what my name is, so you just say all of them.
I like calling you Ada Field.
I know. I just wish I hadn't changed my name then.
Listen, I fell in love with Ada Field.
Okay.
That's who I fell in love with.
Okay.
I don't know this Ada Williams.
Who's this bitch? It's like Lizzo. I'm 100% that bitch.
Today, the podcast is about food.
I know. I'm excited because I feel like you and I are incredibly passionate about food, and by that I mean eating it. And also, I'm really into reading about it.
Yeah, I'm really into eating it.
I'm more into eating it than reading it.
I think we could do an actual podcast series about food.
Yeah, we could probably do like a trilogy or even like a Game of Thrones 8 seasons on food.
Yeah.
Because we are so...
Like The Hobbit.
Because we're so...
Because it's what I look like. You know, like the camera adds 10 pounds.
Yeah.
Well, my mind adds 10 pounds on top of that.
I think mine adds 15. Do you know what my mind does? My mind just goes reverting back to an old filter of before I had kids when I was really young and taught.
I remember her.
You remember her, right?
Yeah.
And so my filter automatically just compares me to that and then feels underwhelmed by where I'm at now.
There is Robbie Williams, and that was chosen by Fee Glover. Thank you so much to everybody who's been on the panel. We'll do a final go round to see if there's any other business that they'd like to bring to our attention. Fee, anything else you want to say? You know, messages to people you know, shout-outs?
Shout outs. God, Trevor.
You've always wanted to be a DJ. I know.
Dude, I don't have any other shout outs, but if anybody would like to give Fortunately a listen, we're having the time of our lives at the moment. And also, can I just say something? We've got an email address. It took us 2.5 years to get an email address, Trevor. And the emails that come in from our listeners are so beautiful and wonderful. They've turned into basically the entire content of the podcast. That is my shout-out.
Tell us what it is, then.
It's a shout-out to myself, fortunately.podcast@bbc.co.uk, or as Jane says it, fortunately.podcast@bbc.co.uk. Therein lies the difference between us. Somehow it works.
Yeah, there are others. And Jimmy, any final thoughts from you?
Only to share that oleaginous apparently means exaggeratedly and distastefully complimentary. But this has been such a pleasurable experience.
That is what I am.
I just want to say something genuinely complimentary. So how lovely it's been to chat with you all.
Excellent. Well, it's been great to have you on. Good luck with Times Radio and all your other multifarious activities. And final word from Mike. Anything from you?
Just listen to join the British Podcast Awards on Saturday. Great bunch of people organising it. and fantastic podcast, all nominated. It's going to be a blast.
I'm sure it will. Thank you very much indeed, panel. Thank you for listening. If you have been, we'll go and join David Lloyd, I would guess. And there won't be a roundtable next month because it's August and we don't do it then, but we'll be back in September. Thanks a lot for listening. I've been Trevor Down. Here's David.
Five years ago this week, the BBC's Sunday chart ritual came to an end as the show proper moved to Fridays.
Good afternoon. It's Friday, the 10th of July, 2015. It's 4 o'clock. This is BBC Radio 1, and welcome to the exciting new sound of the official chart with Greg James for the first time ever on a Friday. Welcome to a new era for the official chart and the entire music industry. Today we have 6 new entries, 2 big climbers, but the question is, will there be a brand new number one? And it's been a busy week.
The Radio 1 chart moving to its new Friday scheduling this week in 2015. The man who helped commercial radio claim the Sunday evening chart crown is 70 years old this week. He moved from Canada to Luxembourg as a teenager and never looked back. Keith Jensen.
Right now on a Friday night, it's 15 minutes after 8 o'clock, quarter after 8, 8:15, and it's time to play...
Bingo! Bingo!
Oh, you're right. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to Bingo Scoop on Radio Luxembourg, Friday night edition, and this is Kid Jensen reading the numbers for you tonight. To play the game, all you have to do is cross off those 30 numbers in your card.
Graham Nash, David Crosby, from a feature album from last fall called Wind on the Water. That was Homeward Through the Haze, 13 after 12 o'clock. Downtown Nottingham, this is Radio Trent from Castlegate.
Thank you very much, okay. David. You're a real jock of all wave bands, you know. Broadcasting not only on radios 1 and 2, and stereo as well. You know, I understand David got the job because he could chew gum and walk at the same time. And you can catch him tomorrow afternoon at 2 o'clock. Good afternoon to you. It's the Kid here, once again, sitting in and messing around for DLT, who's out on the Radio 1 Roadshow.
Falling down 2 to number 12, Michael Jackson, Will You Be There? And at number 11, falling 4, UB40.
Happy 70th birthday to Kid Jensen. What a lovely man. 50 years ago this week, a commercial radio station began broadcasting from a former pub in Peterborough.
Good morning. You're listening to Harrywood Radio, broadcasting on 225 metres in the medium wave. That's 1332 kilohertz and 95.7 VHF in stereo. In a moment, the news at 6, followed by Daybreak with myself, Dave Bowen, and Jonathan Kramer.
Britain's 22nd independent radio station has just come on the air. It's Harrywood Radio, based in Peterborough in Cambridgeshire. Harrywood is the first news-based station outside London, and it'll give heavy emphasis to news and information programmes.
It's the first one on Harrywood, the first one on Daybreak, too, the Bellamy Brothers, and Let Your Love Flow. It's day one, of course, an exciting time. We've got Anglia Television in the studios with us this morning once again, and they're recording a film for the series. Evening, you'll be able to see it.
The start of Harrywood Radio this week in 1980. When Steve Wright left Radio 1 Afternoons, it seemed like he'd been doing that show for a lifetime. In fact, it was just 12 years. And this week, he's been on his Radio 2 Afternoon stint for 21 years.
Hello. This is Steve here on Radio 2. How you doing there? All right. So nice to be back with you. I just can't tell you. Partly cloudy, partly sunny, scattered thunderstorms. Monday, 5th of July, 1999.
Now, here's Richard Easter, Colin Berry, Janie Lee Grace, and Steve Wright.
Hello, good afternoon. I'm Steve Wright, and here is Janie Lee Grace.
Very good afternoon to you.
And here's Richard Easter.
Steve Wright in the afternoon, replacing Stu Pott on Radio 2 this week in 1999, 5.5 years after the show left Radio 1. It's 30 years this week since Melody Radio launched in London. It's now magic, but when it started, it played instrumental music.
17 minutes past 10. Good morning to you. This is Melody Radio, the light music heart of London.
Lord Hanson had heard beautiful music stations in America and said, I want to have my own station. So it was, you know, it was independently owned. And you didn't have to say a lot. It was mainly instrumental music. Then gradually Jeff Mullin, he said to Lord Hanson, look, you know, to get a bigger audience, we need to put a few vocals in. So then some vocals came in. But the other thing you did was you had to read the news. And of course, I'd done that early in my career at Tyne Tees Television and ABC and other stations, so I had read news before. And so on the hour, you would read the news, and then mainly it was liner cards. And I mean, the presentation to do was very boring, and it just amazed me, the number of people who told me how much they loved it.
David Hamilton, reflecting on Lord Hanson's Melody Radio in London 30 years ago. In the UK, in the absence of much other music radio, back in the 70s, we used to catch the American Top 40 beamed in on many transmitters. And that programme made its debut in US markets this week, 50 years ago.
Satisfaction, the Rolling Stones. This is Casey Kasem with American Top 40. We've counted down 39 of this week's 40 best-selling songs in the country. Well, that leaves only one. And it moved into the top spot just this week. And as far as I know, this group has never explained exactly why they chose their weird name. But they do tell us where they found it. On chilly nights, the Aborigines of Australia took a dog to bed with them to keep warm. On colder nights, they'll take two dogs. And when it really gets cold, they need three dogs to keep from freezing. Now that's a cold night. A three-dog night.
Billboard's number one.
4th of July 1970 and the debut of Casey Kasem's American Top 40. So with Minster FM launching in York 28 years ago.
Testing on 104.7 MHz FM. Minster FM playing Yorkshire's capital hits from 6 a.m. on Saturday, July the 4th.
BBC Radio York starting 38 years ago.
BBC Radio York in North Yorkshire. We're with you in North Yorkshire.
The first edition of Radio Newsreel on the BBC Overseas Service 80 years ago.
This is the General Forces Programme presenting Radio Newsreel.
And the BBC Trust rejecting plans to close Six Music 10 years ago. Who would be around to save it now? Those are this week's Radio Moments.
The Radio Today Programme with Broadcast Bionics.
Original music for this podcast was composed by Mick Essay.